Welcome everybody to today's Ops DSSA call on the 16th of January. On the call we have Olivier Crepin-Leblanc, Mikey O'Connor, Jörg Schweiger, and for Mike and staff we have Bart Boswinkel and Christina Nordstrom. Apologies from Jim Galvin, Julie Hedlund, and Patrick Jones.
Thanks, Christina. Welcome all. I think we have a fairly short agenda ahead of us today. Especially since Patrick's not with us, so we'll have to wait on the first agenda item. We got some pretty good comments from Katrina that I threw up into a note there on the screen, and I kind of obliquely reminded people to comment and haven't seen any since then when I did the status report on Saturday. So maybe this is getting shorter and shorter since Julie isn't on the call either, and she's really the one who probably needs to see this more than anybody. Did anybody have any huge reactions to Katrina's notes? They all looked like really good tidying up kind of stuff, perhaps except for the last couple where we might want to thin out the OARC specific stuff. I mean, I think the way we got there was good. We modeled our stuff on it, but I think she raises a good point that it might be just as well to leave that out of the final document. And then the last point about vouching, I actually kind of wanted to push back against number five. I think that the vouching business is important to what we're doing. And so with the exception of that, you know, I thought that the first three were really good detail catches. And I also thought that the OARC reference stuff might be something we'd want to work out of it. But maybe we should just wait until Julie's on the call. But if anybody else has strong reactions to this, might be good to at least kick the conversation off and then maybe take it to the list, the general list, as a way to trigger that final round of comments. And then try and push along towards a consensus call fairly quickly here, just to put this one finally to bed. Any thoughts about any of that ramble?
Mikey, this is Bart.
Go ahead.
I think waiting for Julie is an excellent idea for a couple of reasons. She said she wanted to wait for other comments as well, so she's seen this. And I don't know, and that's so that's one. The second point is, was there a deadline in Julie's email to provide comments? I can't recall it.
Oh, I can't either. Let me look back.
If not, maybe you or the co-chairs could send out an email that says, if somebody has comments, send them in. To be most helpful before the next DSSA call itself, or by Thursday.
I'll take that one. That's a good idea. I see that Julie did not put a deadline in there.
Yeah, no, because then we have because Julie was waiting for more comments before she wants to incorporate them.
Yeah,
that's a
great idea. Yeah. I've got that email underway. I'll push it off right after the call. That's a good point. Any other thoughts on this at this point? Jörg, go ahead. Oh, you're muted, I think, Jörg.
Okay, I made it this time.
There you go.
You know, it's star six on the other conference call, and it's star 7 in this one.
I know.
So
it drives me crazy. So what I do is I don't even mess with that. I just use the mute button on my phone so that I don't have to.
Okay, that might be a good idea as well. So, okay,
yeah.
This is your for the transcript. I can perfectly agree to Katrina's point 1 through 4. I feel a little bit strange about her point 5, and this is because I think if we would live it up to what Katrina has been proposing, this would become a co-chair game all over the place. And this is what makes me feel thinking about it, whether the process we have been stating before wouldn't be better, because this is all related to if the co-chairs don't like it, the co-chairs do each and everything, and that is a little bit too stringent for me to direct it to the co-chairs. That's all I think about her paragraph 5, so I would suggest to stick to the process we have been describing before.
Thanks, Jörg. Bart, go ahead.
This is Bart again, just as a reminder, initially the proposal was there was no role for the co-chairs at all. So maybe that's one point. It was inserted as a kind of bootstrapping process because there was nothing to bootstrap the whole process at all. So that is a bit on the history of it. So I fully agree with Jörg to the extent I could agree, but is that, the role of the co-chairs is evolved, if you look at Katrina's email, while initially you didn't want any role at all as co-chairs.
Yeah, and I think that, just to weigh in with my view, I think we've actually hammered on this so much and done a pretty good job in the document. What this comment says to me is that maybe we need to expand or clarify that part of the document so that we make it clearer what the role is and why we framed it that way, but not necessarily change it. 'Cause I think that what Katrina's comment says to me is that we haven't quite made it in terms of doing a good job on describing it well.
Or explaining it. Because the process itself, she captures the process, she understands the process. In that sense, it's well written down. The only point is, the explanatory notes whatsoever, as a response to Katrina, put it in the email. This is how it evolved.
Well, I'm discovering that this process that we're describing has a lot of utility in other parts of ICANN, in other working groups.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking that what this might be is sort of a clue for us to just puff up that part of the document so that other people who don't have the benefit of all this conversation that we've had are trying to use it, they're really clear on sort of the thoughts that we had when we had this conversation. So I'd be inclined to just puff up that part of the document a little bit. I think a couple of sentences in that paragraph just to sort of recount the context and the rationale would probably do it.
Maybe, Mikey, maybe put it and say, I could ask Julie that Julie and I discuss this, tomorrow or over the next couple of days, but I wouldn't include it in the NDA as such, because then you have a normative part and a descriptive part in one document.
I'm not thinking of the NDA. I'm thinking of the little policy memo that we're using to describe how we handle confidential information. I'm not thinking that any of this stuff goes into the NDA. that's the non-disclosure agreement is essentially a legal agreement that we haven't really touched. But I think in terms of a document like this confidential information memo, where we're describing a process and saying, well, here's how we're going to do it, I think it's okay to also include the why.
Yeah.
Because it's not a contract. It's really just a policy framework. That, you know, we might be able to use as a model in other parts of the organization. And so to educate a little bit more than normal, I think, is okay. Maybe you and Julie can have a chat about all this, and I will send off the nudge note, maybe setting the deadline for Friday, since that'll give us, you know, over the weekend, and it's a short week for a lot of people in the U.S. So we'll kind of get the conversation started there.
Agenda for the Ops call next week.
Yeah, right, and then we'll just push this back a week and take it on again.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me. Olivier, what's on your mind?
Thanks, Mikey. It's Olivier here. Has Julie been in touch with ICANN Legal about this?
That's a good question.
I'll ask Julie.
Because they might have a point of view on this. I mean, they might have already been faced with a similar thing, and I guess it's probably just a case of wording, isn't it?
I think that's a great idea. The only problem is that this month is probably not a real good month to take more work to ICANN Legal, given the PLD's thing is kicking off.
It's never the right month.
I know, but, you know, this is probably the worst month of the decade. So, you know, we might, I think it's a great thing to put on Julie's punch list, but we might not hold her feet to the fire to get it turned around this month.
Let me check first with Julie whether she's contacted Legal or not, or whether it's based on something they've produced in the past. That's something for next week's Ops call as well.
Oh, I'm sure it's not from them, because I know where this document came from. The NDA came from Legal, but this confidentiality thing came from my mind map that backed up that standard consultant's two-dimensional matrix thing. So I'm sure that it didn't originate there. And
no, but I don't know whether she checked with them.
Yeah, I think that's the key question. I would be willing to bet reasonable money that she's not checked it, because it probably didn't occur to her even any more than it occurred to me, because this is, in one sense, an internal operating process for the working group, but it has turned into something that's pretty close to what Legal probably does. So I think that's a great question, Olivia. Let's run that one to ground for sure. That's a good one. So that's an action for you, Bart.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else? Those are good ones. This is probably more conversation than I should have waited on this whole thing till Julie was on the call. But Julie, when you're listening to this transcript, sorry. Olivier, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. It's Olivier. Then the next question is on number five here. Is the vouching process necessary? I thought it was. But then I also have reservations about vouching for anyone. Have we reached that point of the discussion yet? Or?
This is a fine time for that. You know, we had that long discussion about the and Bart sort of recounted it a few minutes ago. We have a process where it's mostly a process of self-vouching. If we follow the OARC approach, but we needed a way to kick it off. And I think I, at the beginning of that, was saying, well, I'm not comfortable necessarily that I've been imbued as a co-chair with that kind of authority. And I talked myself out of that reservation somewhere along the line. I think we really do need a way to get it started and then let the rest of the process unfold more on a peer-to-peer basis. I'm a little uncomfortable. So go ahead.
You were about to say you're a little uncomfortable about something.
I'm a little uncomfortable with, you know, this is back to the point that Jörg made, which is, I don't know these people very well, so I wouldn't be able to vouch for very many. I could vouch for folks like Greg and Rick and stuff like that, but in terms of many of the people on the working group, I this is my first experience with them, and
I don't feel comfortable. Jörg doesn't seem to be comfortable. We need to find something to go around that.
Well, I think the way we finesse that is to vouch for a few people that we are comfortable with. So, for example, I can vouch for a few folks out of the GNSO because I know them and I've worked with them on other working groups and know that they have the highest integrity imaginable. And that's probably enough to seed the group, to get it started, to provide a core group from whom other people can be vouched for. Because the way we set it up is a person can enter the group if they're vouched for by two other people who are already in it. And so what I would be uncomfortable with for sure is to have the co-chairs be the only vouching authority because of the limits of who I know. But I'm okay with the idea of vouching for a few folks to start the group and then letting the group itself extend its trust outward from that core group. And the one problem that begs is, well, what if there's a person who's unknown to anybody who wants to be in it? And we could either leave that bridge uncrossed until we get to it, or we could struggle to figure out how to handle that. Anyway, that's sort of where I'm at the moment.
How do you feel about the objections?
I'm sort of using objection 5 to say we should probably explain ourselves better, but I don't agree with it. I do think that the vouching process is necessary because of the nature of the relationships that are there. I think that if we get to the place where, let's pick on VeriSign. Let's say that they have to, in order for us to do whatever we're going to do, they have to reveal confidential information. I think that they need that trust structure around them in order to be able to justify back up their chain to their bosses the decision to share the information. So I think vouching is pretty important. I just don't think that we've done a great job of rationalizing that. But I agree with the need for it. So, I would say that I would certainly accept 1 through 3 of hers, I like number four as well. We don't really need to highlight the OARC stuff quite as much, but I disagree with number five. And so that's sort of where I'm at. What do you think?
Yeah, Mikey, yeah, it's Olivier here. It's a religious thing, isn't it? It's the difference between,
yeah.
For those geeks among us, it's the difference between VAX VMS and Unix. In VMS, you're only allowed to do things that you're given. You're allowed to do that, and that's it. So you're given privileges. In Unix, it's the other way around. You can do anything you can until or unless you're not given the privilege.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that part of what we are doing is presenting that exact choice to the people who have the confidential information and saying, which would you prefer? And I think we heard pretty clearly from folks like Rick and Keith from VeriSign and stuff like that, that they're willing to play in this process, but they need to be very strongly assured of the controls that surround it. And I think that the vouching process is pretty important to them. I think it raises their confidence level a lot that they can share what would otherwise be extraordinarily sensitive information and know that it's going to be well protected. So I think in this one, I would tend to be on the VAX VMS side of the equation.
Okay.
But, you know, let's put this one back out to the list. Actually, maybe what I'll do is I got permission to forward this note to us. I'll ping Katrina again and make sure it's okay that I push this out to the whole list as part of my deadline reminder note. And I'll highlight that last one as an especially important one for others to think about and comment on, and we'll see what we get. You okay with that, Olivier, or and all? Your part. Does that seem like a reasonable approach?
Mikey, it's Olivier again. I'm happy with the system, which makes it more, legitimate to have people handling confidential information. So, of course, the vouching process is a lot stronger than just having an objections process. And I think that if people feel uneasy about the vouching process, it's probably because it is quite a responsibility. But I'm also, or certainly on my part, it does not mean that I would favor the objections process. I think the objections process is very, I guess, pretty loose. It's the same sort of thing as if you don't get an answer from anyone, then that person will be in, or that will be voted as a yes. And certainly not responding is definitely not a yes. So,
yeah.
You know, but I guess we'll probably find out how well that builds the team or the teams when we start running the, when we start building teams, hoping that hopefully everyone will be able to vouch for everyone else in whichever way we define vouch as. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that we will. I don't think that at the time that we form the teams, there are a bunch of people even in the GNSO contingent that I can't vouch for because it's not that I think they're evil people. It's just that I've not worked with them enough to know their motives, their history. And so I don't think that everybody will be able to vouch for everybody, and actually I think that's probably a good thing because that also makes a chain of accountability along with a chain of trust. that says, you know, if I vouch for Rick Wilhelm and he proceeds to spew a bunch of confidential information all over the internet, I'm on the hook for part of the responsibility there because I vouched for him.
Yeah.
And I'm actually quite all right with that. Because I think it then gives me a pretty good rationale for saying, you know, when somebody like Don Blumenthal comes, who strikes me as a very capable guy, I can say, you know, Don, it's not that I don't like you. It's just that I've never been in a circumstance where I've built the knowledge to know whether I can vouch for you or not. So I think it's actually better not to have the goal of everybody vouching for everybody because it takes some of the pressure off to be, you know, sort of Mr. Mikey nice guy and, oh, well, Mikey doesn't like me. You know, that's a bad thing. No, it's just that I haven't worked with you before. And I think that that's good. And I think the one dilemma is, well, what about the poor person who nobody knows and nobody can vouch for and yet has a lot to contribute? And I think that maybe the way to do that is to set out a course for them that says, look, the way to getting past that barrier is really on your shoulders. You need to have worked with people in another context in a way to build their trust. And that's not our problem to solve. It doesn't make you a bad person. It just means that you're a person that nobody's had any experience with, and you should generate that experience in a lower stakes game. You know, participate in some other working groups or something. But it's not the working group's job to build trust relationships. It's our job to ensure that the information that's in these confidential working groups is safe.
It's Olivier again, Mikey. Would there be a possibility of having people recommended one way or other from basically people who are not in the DSSA? So I'd say person XYZ gets recommended by a net demigod.
Yeah. And I think that the way that could happen would be if there could be a chain of trust established between two people in the DSSA and the net demigods. And I think it requires two net demigods, not one. According to our process, I think we require two vouches. If there, you know, and let's paint sort of a hypothetical. Let's say that one of the net demigods is Paul Vixie, and one of the net demigods is Vint Cerf. Let's just pick two big names. Well, there are plenty of people on the DSSA who can vouch for Paul Vixie and Vint Cerf, and thus we can extend the trust through them. And
okay.
And leave the vouching process in place. And, you know, when we accept the recommendations from the net demigods, I think we need to let the demigods know that they are taking on more than just a Facebook friending thing or a LinkedIn friending thing. You know, they're going to be accountable if this person that they vouched for sprays a bunch of confidential information all over the place. We're going to come back to them and say, ahem. You get to join that culprit in the pot of boiling water. So don't be casual in your vouching, just like we're not being casual. But, yeah, I think that could work.
Mikey,
now we,
this is
yeah,
your,
go ahead, Jörg. Yeah, go ahead.
Just want to say that the process you just described before is fine with me. The only thing we would have to do is we would have to describe this to the DSSA members so that they can understand how the bootstrapping is really working and how we would overcome situations like that, that nobody could be vouched for, and how we figure out how we would go on with situations like this.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think it's really too bad that Julie's not on the call. I have a feeling that Julie's going to have to listen to the transcript, and then she and I can sort of work up a bit of a draft here and bring it back, because I think that a lot of this stuff was sort of unspoken in my mind, but it's not in the draft, and I think that's part of the reason why Katrina raised point number five. That's why I like point number five. It's not that I agree with it. It's because it raises the need for what you're saying, Jörg, which is we really do need a better explanation of this in the document so that people understand what's going on. Okay, well, sorry, Julie. We should have waited a week.
I'll tell her, Mikey.
Yeah, and she's going to probably have to listen to the transcript. And, sorry. Okay, the last thing I had on my mind was first one more round of kudos to Olivier for taking on the meeting job. But then I was thinking about this, that, and again, this is maybe a little more aimed at Bart and Julie. So again, Julie's missing a big call here, but as I was scribing, I realized that I was really doing sort of two jobs at the same time. I was being the actual type the words into the document scribe, but I was also running the voting part of the meeting. And that might be a job that could get cleaved off. So that, because, you know, I slowed things down a fair amount because I was sort of jumping back and forth between putting stuff into the draft and also resetting the voting. And so I was wondering, Bart, if I could give that job away so that I could just be...
Oh, yeah, no problem. Let's say we'll sort it out.
Okay. It's not hard. There's a little, but it means that somebody, you know, Christina or Gisela or Julie or whoever, you know, taking care of this, needs to be a presenter so that they can jump into that pod and reset the votes. So once you've done it once, it's a piece of cake.
I think Natalie or Gisela are hosts or presenters anyway.
Yeah.
I suppose they should be able to do it.
Absolutely right. Yeah. And it occurred to me that I could just, the next time we do this, I could just ask them, but I didn't want to just blindside you all with that. And so if you're okay with that, I could just go ahead and ask them to do it, but I didn't want to just arrive unannounced on that one.
Yeah, normally Julie is host as well, isn't she? Christina, you know? No, you don't. It's
I don't know how they usually do it, but I mean, Gisela, they should be hosts.
Yeah. So as a host, they should be able to do it, Mikey.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it turns out that they're not at the moment, I'll just promote them so that they can.
No, but so maybe that's something. We'll see. Yeah, I'll send a note to the around among ICANN staff so they know this is happening.
Yeah. I think that I'm going to hang on to the actual scribing because I think it's useful to do that summarizing of comments thing that I do, where I sort of listen to what people are saying and I write down their words and then play it back and say, is that what you meant? And stuff like that. There's actually quite a lot of content going on in that. But You know, I'm sort of preparing for the day that something terrible happens, like I have no electricity and the internet's out and so on and so forth. And so I'm wondering, for the other part of the scribing, if somebody would like to sort of take on that role, again, not permanently, but, you know, sort of the way Olivier took over running the meeting. I think it's good to start rotating these jobs around, not that I don't want to do them, but just so that if, you know, something comes along that knocks me off the meeting altogether, we don't lose a whole week just because Mikey can't get on the net. And that gets me to a tools discussion, which Olivier and I started to have, and which I need to follow up on because I forgot, which is that the tool that I use is a for money tool. That mind mapping software that I use is a few hundred dollars to purchase. And it's more stable on a Mac. It turns out that Olivier tried using the open source system on a PC and it worked fine, whereas what I need to check is whether the problems I ran into on a Mac with that tool persist. So anyway, there's kind of a little sub-project in all of this to sort of figure out the scribing half of the puzzle. And I was curious if anybody was sort of interested in joining me in that journey. Nice pause. Where's Mark with his paralyzed right hand? Well, I'm gonna keep at this. The goal is to make myself dispensable, which right now I'm feeling uncomfortable in that I'm not dispensable yet. And so especially Jorg and Olivier, think deep into your heart as to whether either of you would like to sort of become the backup scribe in cases of
Mikey,
of need. All right.
Go ahead. Let me check on my end as well with regard to the tool, because if we're too dependent on I think it's Mind Manager, isn't it?
Yes.
Let me see what we can do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine switching to a different mind mapping tool and learning it, because I'm using it in a very basic way, and so if it turns out that there's another one out there, I'm happy to switch. But the last time I tried using FreeMind on a Mac, that version didn't. It did fine for small maps, but the ones that we're building here are pretty big, and it tended to mangle them.
Yeah.
And that brought up another, as long as you're kind of on a tools track, Bart, here's another one for you. I had a sort of a sidebar conversation with I guess it was Marika,
mm-hmm.
in which she was saying, you know, I, as a staff support person, as a meeting support person, find it very difficult to do what you do, where you share your screen. This is just to me. Where, Mikey, you share your screen and you have the Adobe room open at the same time. And I realized that the reason that I can do what I do so easily is because I have two screens on my computer. One of them is the one that I'm sharing, and the other one is the one where the Adobe room sits. And after the call last Thursday, Cheryl and I kind of hung on the call and rearranged the meeting room just a little bit to fix a problem that Cheryl was having. And then she was saying, this is great. I'm going to start using this on the at-large side of things. And we ran into that problem again, which is that the meeting support person on the ICANN side may be in a situation where they're supporting a meeting which they can't support because they don't have the right hardware. So Cheryl and I had a riotous time, as we always do, and yucked it up and said, well, that's easy. We just have to get better computers and more screens for the ICANN staff. And it was sort of a joke, but it really isn't a joke. I think there is a point at which there's a need for sort of a minimum set of capabilities available to the staff people supporting these really complex policy calls.
Yeah, and they're getting more complex every day. Say, because this is more for a long-term issue, will you be in Costa Rica?
Yes, I will. And what I was going to say to Bart is that if you want to kick off a conversation about this with some other folks in the staff community of ICANN, I'm happy to participate in calls or emails and share what I know and all that kind of stuff, because you know, I tend to be pretty adventuresome with sort of the new toys. And
it's proven its worth on the DSSA working group calls anyway, and there is a lot of spin off in other working groups as well, what I've seen. So it's worth trying to pursue this, to see how we can improve, staff perspective supporting the working groups.
Right.
But it's probably a matter of time and convincing others and then just the policy staff.
Right, but you know what Cheryl and I were getting into was a situation where the sort of volunteer community might put you, the staff, in a situation where you're being asked to do something that you don't have the tools to do.
Yeah.
And
support is back, and so it's used as a lever as well.
Yeah, it's partly a lever, and it's partly a very strong desire on my part not to put staff people in a situation where they're being asked to do work that they don't have the tools to do.
That's why I asked, maybe, say, if you're in Costa Rica, it's an opportunity to sit down and discuss it more in depth, say what you're really doing. With people who do provide the support on Adobe Rooms, etc.
Yeah, and if you wanted to set up a session where, you know, we had that conversation and, you know, we found an extra screen and I plugged in my Mac so I could show you, I'd be delighted to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's that.
I've taken notes.
Cool. Okay, I think that's enough for today. It's 9:45. Anybody got anything else on their mind that they want to talk about before we break off? Jörg, do you want to run the meeting again this week? Oh, no, not Jörg. I'm sorry, I just transplanted Jörg's brain into Olivier's. But Jörg, you could do it. Do you want to run the meeting this week? Sorry, let me phrase that differently. You're muted. If I could switch over to the Unix model and say, oh, I haven't heard anything from Jörg, so I guess he wants to do that.
No, I'm not perfectly so. You see, I would, but then again, I'm not even capable of handling my own phone correctly, so it would. Just clearly exceed my capabilities of running such things.
Oh, but look at the opportunity. You'd never have to mute your phone at all. That's one of the big benefits of being a coach.
Halfway persuaded here.
Okay. Well, I'll let you off the hook. I'll let everybody off the hook, but at the same time, I want to make it really clear that I have absolutely no stake whatsoever in being the all-Mikey, all-the-time meeting leader. And so if anybody wants to do that stuff and is feeling oppressed by the fact that I run those meetings, I really, really want to spread that work around a little bit. And so,
Mikey, we all do know that we would get away only second best. So
oh, get out of here.
Volunteering.
Oh, get out of here. I thought Olivier actually did a better job of running the meeting because of several things. One, Olivier pushed us through the work a bit faster than I do. And so I actually would give Olivier a higher grade on running that meeting than I do. And I think part of the reason for that is because when I'm running the meeting and running the room and scribing all at the same time, my concentration isn't quite what it should be. That's a lot of tasks to do simultaneously. And so I miss things in the chat. So I think it's actually, there's actually a pretty good case to be made that the meeting went better with Olivier running it than it would have had I been running it. Just to push back against that a little bit. And so I'm going to turn to Olivier and say, Olivier, would you be willing to run the meeting again this week? Olivier's muted too. Or else his right arm is broken. He can't raise it.
You scared him off.
I guess so. What happened to Olivier? Geez, I give him a big compliment, and what happens? He just falls off the call altogether. You know,
Anyway, Mikey, I personally do think that you're really doing an absolutely great job, and I do understand that sometimes you feel that you would... that you're in a position where you seem to be indispensable, undisposable. Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If that really happens, I think either one of us, Jim, Olivier, me, whoever, would just spring into place and try to fill out what the gap you left. But I personally would appreciate if you can go on the way you did before.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Jorg. And I don't know where Olivier went. You know, Olivier, you really muted your phone effectively.
So, Olivier just responded on the...
Oh, here he is. He's in the chat. He can't unmute, the poor dear. Oh, poor Olivier. Now we get to tell jokes about Olivier. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Arg, he says. Oh, yeah, that's fine, Olivia. I'll do it this week, and then we'll put you on deck for a week from Thursday. And I'm so sorry that your phone is catastrophically muted. I'm glad you can at least hear what we're doing. But this does sound like a good point to end the call, since we've now lost one of the co-chair's ability to speak on it. So with that, thanks, folks. We'll see you all on Thursday, and have a great week. Christina, I think you can wrap up the recording. We'll call it a day.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.